What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that again.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Happy Monday.
Here we are. You just wrapped up a recent self-portraiture workshop, and I had a lot of questions for you about it. I have a lot of thoughts about making art about yourself or keeping documentation and how that has impacted my own world and the conversations I have with people about it. And I had questions for you. So I thought we could use this recent experience that is tethered to a lifetime experience that you have talking about this kind of thing and use it as a little episode for our listeners about documentation and self-portraiture.
I love it. It's my favorite topic. The workshop was called The Self-Gaze. I loved how pithy that was.
Well, it's like it's leaning directly into the common critique, which is navel gazing.
Or the male gaze.
Or the male gaze. Yeah.
Yeah. So we addressed both of those things. There is this chapter in John Berger's book on ways of seeing. And this book was written a very long time ago and it's very gendered, but he talks about how women don't perceive themselves. They perceive themselves being perceived. He says when a woman walks across the room, she is seeing herself be seen walking across the room versus that she's just walking. And so that is something, it was something that I read in grad school and have thought about what is it to reframe. I've been raised to always be seeing myself through other people's eyes so that I could stay safe often. And this idea of flipping that script and just seeing myself, and a tool to do that has been self-portraiture and practicing what it is to do what it is you want to do, dress the way that you want to do, move through the world in ways that feel congruent with your like values, beliefs, desires, and how hard that can be when you're constantly just like feeling yourself being witnessed and like adapting your behavior based on that. And one of the tools that I think is really useful in practicing that is in self-representation, documentation, being alone with yourself and seeing yourself through your own lens versus through male gaze, cis het, ableist, racist gazes that are out there. Like we're permeated with all these ways that we're seeing ourselves through other people's perspective. And so that's what the basis of this workshop was about, was what is it to sit within your own gaze.
Okay, can I tell you a story that this is bringing up for me that I still don't quite know what to do with? I'm so interested in this, what it's like to move through the world as not seeing yourself, but being seen by others. That is very true of my experience of disability. I've never like equated that to my womanhood or being a woman. So it's interesting to think about like who are the people that know this experience and why, and who are the people who don't. And I will tell you, up until relatively recently, I thought that's how everyone moves through the world, that you are very, like, that you are aware of the narratives put on top of you, and you're aware of what people are thinking as you move through the world. And I led this workshop for anyone was invited to come, and it was writing workshops and like self-narration, and it was this packed room, and I was incredibly late and showed up to this room that was just like waiting for me to be there. I was so flustered. My slides weren't working. This is not that relevant. I literally parked in the middle of the parking lot of this space because I was so late and I couldn't find a parking space. Anyways, that's the context. I go into this workshop. It's full of people of all kinds. And I start kind of explaining this idea of like the narratives put upon you and like, so naming what those are, like what are the stories that you feel put on top of you? And another way of talking about that is like the assumptions that people make about you when you move into a room. And there were these two dudes, and they were so confused. And they were like, I don't understand what you're asking me to do. I don't understand. Like, what? I have nothing. And I remember just being like, that's not possible. That's not possible that you don't have that. And I was like trying so hard to help them understand it and like bring them to this like, okay, so like you walk into a room of strangers that you've never met and you sit down at a table with them. And like, anyways, they were completely oblivious even to this concept. And I remember that being a weird and continues to be a weird point of reflection for me of like, there are people who move through the world that way. And it is so hard for me to even imagine what that feels like. It's profoundly affects the way that I move through the world. It's a huge part of the way that I move through the world. And I think for you too, for a number of different reasons. And I think in my experience, many people who have visible and invisible disabilities, regardless of gender or any other identity markers, I think there are a lot of ways that that can happen for us. And apparently there are a lot of ways that doesn't happen for us, but it seems like a pretty defining part of what it means to be human for a lot of us. And in a way that it has been largely unexamined or unattended to, which makes me feel like this is important work for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
But have you had experiences like that where you bring this idea to people and they're like, what?
I think actually I am such an acquired taste that it is rare that someone shows up for something that I am hosting or creating who doesn't know exactly what the fuck I'm talking about. To my own detriment, I am not very accessible, which was pointed out to me recently in a coaching call. That I have worked so hard to be unpalatable to anyone who might not get what I'm throwing down, that I am limiting my reach. That's another conversation for another day. But no, I haven't encountered. I mean, okay, yes, I've encountered these people, but not when I'm like doing a thing. No one has ever. If they have, I've been completely unaware. Of anyone who has attended something that I have organized or taught who wasn't like right there in it. But I also like, I think your work is broader than mine in terms of who you have reached for and who's showing up to your spaces.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't prepared for it. I truly had been operating under the assumption that that was how we all moved through the world. I just seemed like that seemed unavoidable to me. So when you do sit down to do this work, maybe you don't have those dudes in your workshop, but like, what are some of the things that come up for people where they have hesitancy around doing this kind of work? What do you hear from people?
I mean, it's super vulnerable. It is often really uncomfortable to sit with yourself in this way. And yeah, so there's like the vulnerability, the discomfort. Sometimes this is too intense of a practice and they shouldn't be engaging in this without the support of like a therapist or someone to support them. So I think there are people who are just like, it's too much. It's too intense. And that I really respect the boundaries that they place around how deep they want to go in this, because I think it can be seen as like, oh, we're just taking selfies, which I love a selfie, you know, time and a place. But self-portraiture is really different. And I don't always know. I don't think there's a clear delineation of like which is which, but you like feel it when you know it. And there is an intensity of sitting within your own gaze, using self-reflection, literal reflection, like through a mirror or a lens, to be in conversation with yourself. But people have hangups around, like, it feels navel gazing. It's not important. It's silly. Or they've just like literally never considered it. Or they're like, I'm not skilled for this, which I debunk that pretty fast. Like, it's been years since I've picked up a DSLR. Like, everything is on my phone. And we take some time to teach composition, but the like skill of setting your phone up on a timer and being in front of it is not insurmountable or hard. And there's so many other ways we talk about, like if photography isn't the way that makes sense to capture your body, like how many other ways, writing, collage, poetry, dance, painting, drawing, taking photos of things that aren't your body but that represent it is a, I think, a really soft entry point for understanding. Like your nightstand table, your coffee table, the objects that are always around you. I take a series of photos, like, you know, just like a tabletop down view of whatever I'm working on, my sketchbook, the books I'm reading, the thing I'm drinking, which can feel kind of like silly, like, oh, Instagram, you're showing what you're eating. But actually, to show the context of my tabletop gives you a lot of insight into what I'm experiencing right then or what's happening.
That almost reminds me, is this similar to what
Kate Bingaman Burt?
Yes, Kate. A recent episode with her, and she is it similar to like her illustrating her credit card bills every month, like that kind of?
And her daily drawings where she draws something that she buys every day. Highly self-reflective. That feels like a form of self-portraiture. To see, I have one of her newspapers where it's like all the things that she bought. And that is definitely like a portrait looking into her life and learning something about her. And a portrait doesn't have to tell every single thing about you.
Talk more about the dance option. How do you see dance working as documentation self-reflection?
I think about Cody Cook Parrott's dance practice, where they, for a whole year, they posted a dance video every day where they put on a song and then they danced to it. That is self-expression, self-reflective.
So part of it, though, is hitting record and like keeping it archived?
I think so. And I think it's about the being with yourself in it more than the final product.
And what do you mean by being with yourself in it?
The like time and attention to curate what you're capturing, to pause. I mean, often we're doing these in private. You don't usually like, not that it can't be a public or that I haven't done like taken self-portraiture in public, but usually it's a quiet practice and it's capturing something that you're feeling. It's helping release something. It's allowing you some space between the emotion you're feeling and that feeling, like taking the photo kind of elongates the like crushing pressure. It's literally witnessing yourself. It is taking time to be your own witness. I think that is what I mean by being with yourself, is to be your own witness in that moment.
Does that have to be the moment you make it, or is it like you don't have to be present in the moment you make it, but you're present when you reflect back on it? Sorry if we're getting too nitty gritty. I'm just curious.
No, I love this. I love this. You're asking me stuff that I don't know that I've like fully thought out. So no, it's good. It's making me think. I think it's both. I think it's different for everyone. Often when I'm taking photos of myself, the very first time I remember taking something that I would deem like self-portrait, TM, was I was 16. We had been, we left the church that I had like grown up in, which if you know the backstory of like your whole life revolves around church. Everyone you know is at church. And so that was like really disruptive. So we were trying out new ones and it was horrible. We had just gotten back from visiting a new church and I was in my room just like sobbing and feeling the exquisite kind of pain that only a 16-year-old could know. And I don't mean that to diminish it. I mean that and to say like there's nothing quite like that suffering. And it just felt like I felt so alone. No one could, I just needed someone to know how much grief I was experiencing. And there wasn't anyone in my life that felt safe to share that with. And so I took out my camera and just took a bunch of photos of myself crying. And then I edited them in this like crazy purple, really rich, like jewel tones, purple and pink, where I'm like all washed out. And I felt a sense of release, like immediately. Like there was, I could see myself, what I was experiencing, I knew was real because I could see it on my little digital camera screen. So that is about the like taking the photo, you know, the moment of being in it. But that was 20 years ago. And I still remember what that felt like. And when I look back at those photos, I am with 16-year-old Caitlin again. And so it lives a whole other life now. But like the purpose and the importance of that was the doing of it. I think almost always in my personal practice, it's the doing of the thing, not the sharing also can feel important, but it's the act of doing it and sharing it more than the like sitting with it later.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit, side note also, I'm just like, one day when the technology is invented, I want to do a time travel thing where you and I meet when we're like 16 and 18. And what would that even have been like? I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine, but I want to know.
It might have been really cringe.
I know. Maybe we don't want to see it, but I'm just so curious what it would have meant. Okay. But that idea of like seeing yourself crying as a way of almost like validating the experience, witnessing yourself, so different than what we were talking about at the front end of what people are witnessing when they see you. But what are you experiencing, and what do you want to be seen, and putting that lens on yourself? It reminds me a tiny bit of, I had this conversation with Kel and Lainey Hampton last week on Instagram, and maybe I'll link the conversation in the show notes. This part in particular came at the end of our conversation, but Lainey just started college this year. She has a really rare diagnosis that affects her nerves, and she is losing mobility and is just getting a new wheelchair for the first time in her life. So like, what a time for that transition in your body. And she was asking about like self-love and self-acceptance and how to do that when the images that we have in our head of what beauty looks like, and not just on screens and in magazines, but like you think about starting college. I mean, most colleges, you're not going to see very many people moving through the world the way that you are in this new body that Lainey has. And so I was trying to think about that for me. They actually referenced this part in my book where I talk about how when I was a teenager, I would write these diary entries about my future fantasy life, and in them, I was always walking. And I think there's something really odd in our brains, and I want to see the neurological study that's done on like how we see ourselves when we embody something that we don't see out in the world very often. I wonder about that for you and gender and pregnancy. Something about not having an image outside of us that we can look to that help us see our, I don't know, there's something odd there. Is this making sense to you at all? Like the, what happens in your brain when you don't see the thing that you are, or when I was a teenager, I would get these little glimpses. It was a different world. We weren't all on our iPhones. So I didn't have a lot of video footage of myself, but every once in a while I would see like a video clip of me moving or walking or sitting on a beach or something. And it would like, I would audibly gasp, like it. I couldn't believe that's what I looked like. And so having this like really big chasm between my actual body and how I imagined my body, maybe this would be similar for people who are aging and like trying to reconcile like what it is you look like now and like what your body looks like now. And part of that acceptance being in like being able to witness it, like actually be able to witness yourself, especially when it's just not reflected to us in most of the images around us. And so I told Lainey that like one of the things that I felt was helpful for me, because I don't dream of my future life in a non-disabled body anymore. I feel like more aligned with and aware of the actual body I have. And so I was trying to think about how that bridge was forged. And I think for me, a lot of that had to do with having this Instagram account where I was curating images of myself in this body and wanting to capture that in a beautiful image, like a piece of artwork. Was some doing that did something in my brain to how I experience my own body. I don't know if that is aligning with how you experienced that moment as a 16-year-old taking a picture of yourself crying, but there's something about something happening like in my brain around witnessing myself, experiencing myself. I feel so cheesy, like accepting myself.
But you were taking time to take photos of you, which is like an act of care. You were looking at them, looking at yourself. You were taking time to see you, and you're making something that felt beautiful and pleasing to you. It was like all for, which like when we talk about the self-gaze, I feel like there's so much, even as we're taking portraits, there's so much work to be undone around positioning ourselves or we're documenting ourselves in ways that we feel like would be pleasing culturally. And so there's like so much undoing, and that I still do that.
Yeah, like reframing it so that you're like, oh, I don't want my double chin in that one or something like that. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I mean. It's just we're still considering that. And so I think it's a practice, an exercise in releasing that. But I think it's radical in itself to just pause and see yourself, even if it's still within some of those lenses. Like your gaze is going to come through. I have no idea the science behind.
Wouldn't that, there's got to be something. If anybody is listening and knows of a study, I want to learn about that.
Yeah, I'm sure that exists.
Yeah, there's something super odd about how we conceive of ourselves in relation to what we witness. And I also find myself thinking about that knee-jerk, like, ew, self-navel-gazing, self-obsession, like narcissist practice or whatever. I find myself thinking, particularly with memoir, I talk with a lot of people who like want to do personal writing, but a common thing they say is like, who would want to read my story? Who cares about me? So I think that all seems bundled up in like, ooh, the self, yuck. We shouldn't be looking at the self. But I find myself thinking so much when I was talking to Lainey and thinking about my own experience of writing about self. I think that we are all a lot more connected than we typically think that we are. And me bearing witness to myself, I think, is offering something to you. I think when I like pay attention to my perch, my point of view at this particular time and place, all I'm doing is like throwing up a flag to this great big map and saying like, this is me, where I am, what I see, and what do you see? And there is something about us witnessing ourselves and witnessing each other, like this back and forth collection, where it feels like to me, the way I have come to understand like self-writing, and I think what I hear you talking about with self-portraiture is like, and maybe this is like a sideways door and it's not even what you're trying to communicate, where I'm like, it's not narcissistic. It's selfless. It's neither nor. I mean, I think it's just like bearing witness is like a practice that benefits greater whole that we're all part of. I think that in getting to witness your portraitures, the images that you put in the world, the ones that I resonate with and the ones that I don't, I think it's like it's doing something greater beyond yourself. And even if you never show them to anyone, you don't need to. But I think it, for people that do, I think that there is something important in that act for all of us, not just that one person.
Well, I think sitting with yourself and witnessing yourself, for me, it feels like the more particular or specific or like present I can be with myself, the more I have space for the other people also have all of those things. Like the less I generalize and the more I specifies, I think that is when I have more compassion for other people. And the kinder, kinder I am to myself, the kinder I am to others. And that feels really different than something that is like self-absorbed or navel-gazing. There's a difference between turning everything back to yourself and like being with yourself. Like if I am steady and I know myself and who I am as I move through the world, I don't need to be doing that. Or I feel like now I'm sounding like really grand, like I'm so self-actualized. I don't think any of that is true. But I do know that this act of self-witnessing, self-curation, self-ownership, self-inquiry is how I've moved through leaving high control religion, coming out as queer, navigating a body that is shifting wildly through giving birth, just shifting through age. It's like one of the number one tools that I use to understand how I'm feeling, how my body is moving through the world. And I think that you could do that in, right? There's so many forms that it could take. The form that has felt most potent to me and accessible is portraiture, especially because it's just like on my phone. It's right there. But I think it's less about the medium and more about the intention and time taken to be present with an emotion or just to like understand and claim yourself as yourself outside of all these things that are like projected onto you. Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
So in doing this work and in this workshop, but in other ways that you've taught this to people too, what are some of the patterns that you see in how people react or respond to this work? And then maybe I also wonder if there's any experiences that stand out as like, oh, that witnessing that person's move into this felt distinct for one reason or another.
I mean, there's always crying. We were like 5 minutes into the workshop and people were crying. I think there's something about being invited into a space where everyone is like, we all came to this space together for you to get to be with yourself. And we're going to hold this container so that you have the space and time and soft buffer to do that. That in and of itself is like, I think, pretty jarring based on how we move through the world. I have to remind myself over and over again that someone sitting in front of a mirror and doing a contour line drawing of themselves is could be like one of the most revolutionary things that they have. That sounds really dramatic. It still feels dramatically impactful for me now. But there's something about sitting people down in front of a mirror and asking them to just make eye contact for a solid minute while they draw themselves in one continuous line. Something cracks open in them. And I've been doing it for years. And it's still, every time I do it, it like offers something to me. I'm not sure that I'm answering your question.
Well, to me, what's standing out is that we're maybe not invited to do that very often.
Yeah, like never. No one's saying like, pause and just see yourself as you are and like, what a gorgeous fucking thing. Like, we're inundated with all of the ways that our body is wrong, how to like tape our mouths and tape our foreheads and wrap whatever Skims new thing around our jawline to make it. And that, so we're bombarded with things, with ways to see ourselves as needing fixing or correcting. And we're constantly, especially marginalized bodies, are moving through the world trying to conform as much as we can to stay safe, whether like actually physically or psychologically. And so for someone to come in and say, hey, you can just be here with yourself, and there's nothing that needs changing or fixing. And what a gift that you get to be here at all, to be alive. There's the Andrea Gibson poem about the stars and the universe, and how, like, when the body leaves the soul goes out into the universe, and like the stars are asking it questions and stuff. And it's saying all these really beautiful, difficult, hard things about having a body.
Yes. And remember Goosebumps?
Yes. Like, tell me again about Goosebumps. Tell me again about pain. I think are the last lines in it. And that is what I'm trying to curate in these workshops, these moments, these invitations for self-reflection, is to be with like the flaws and the messy and the whatever is there, and just to bear witness to it and not feel like anything needs any sort of revision or performing to be acceptable.
Yeah. And so part of it is being invited to accept, receive yourself as not needing fixing and bear witness to the beauty that is already. And then I wonder if part of it is also even just the invitation to pause and be quiet with yourself. Like, I know my experience of the world these days is like, faster, more, keep going, now distract. You know, like, it's just this like forever relentless barrage, and to be quiet with yourself. And it's also making me think, I was just talking a bit ago about how this practice has benefits beyond the self. But I'm also reminded of the fact that there is something important about being able to care for yourself, even if it doesn't benefit humanity. I don't know. I mean, I think both things can be true, that like maybe part of the emotion that comes up for people sometimes is like, I feel like I'm being invited to do something that doesn't have to have a bottom line usefulness to it or a greater good. It can just be like, it reminds me a little bit of the feeling of like, I've only gotten like one facial massage in my life, but the entire time that I did, I was just like, like, it felt like such an emotional experience to me. And I think in some ways it was because it was just like, we are caring for you for a minute. You don't need to be useful right now. You can just receive. And that can be really emotional for us, I think, for a lot of us.
Well, and I would push back and say that anytime any person is even 1% more self-aware, self-compassionate, present, thoughtful, that that's better for the world. Always. I also don't think that like us taking self-portraitures is going to like solve anything. You know, I'm not like, this is this big grand thing, but we've talked about this so much in terms of parenting. And I actually was like giving myself a little talk this morning because I've just been really struggling to parent this like past week. Like, everything feels so, 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 so hard. And some of it is just like, it's been a hard little season. And also I have not been tending to myself. I've been going a million miles an hour. I was like, oh, I have not like paused to pull a tarot card. I have not, but except for like prepping for like workshops or something, I have not sat down to self-reflect, to take a photo of myself. I haven't written anything down for myself. And that leads to shitty parenting, shitty peopling. And I know it often feels like, oh, there's so many other things that are so important. And then all of a sudden I'm like, why the fuck am I losing my shit? Why does everything feel so hard and impossible? And I'm like, oh, right. It's been weeks since I've really just paused for a solid 30 minutes without my phone or something else worrying me or trying to like double up what I'm doing. And I think that is inherently really selfish and is not a good way to be tending to my family or the people that I love. If I wished anything of that my parents could have done differently, is I wish that they would have taken some time for self-reflection and self-care and inquiry. But it's uncomfortable. Like, oftentimes the shit that comes up is not like cute. So it's a lot easier to avoid yourself. And we've been taken out of our bodies that it can feel like really jarring, aggressive, violent to like jump into them. So I don't want to discount that at all. And I'm not a trained therapist.
What?
Grain of salt, everyone.
This whole time, I was under the illusion.
I desperately want to know everything a therapist knows. I don't want to see clients. I don't want to be a therapist, but I want to have all of their wisdom at my fingertips and integrate it into art making. It's my like dream PhD program.
Yeah, I think I see multiple things that feel true, but I do keep coming back to, we are more connected than we think about or tend to look at or believe or live by. And our parents taking care of themselves translates into our experience as their kids, and same for our little families. Like, or like, I don't know, even me throwing up pictures of myself on Instagram with my paralyzed legs and being attached to a wheelchair is doing something for more people than just me, even though it is actively rewiring my brain. I think it's doing something in other people's brains too. So I think
we talked about this when we're like, why do we still share our lives on the internet? And it's because representation has been so important to us in viewing other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're talking about seeing yourself, but then seeing someone else see themselves is really powerful.
And also, I feel like there has to be a place where we put aside the mandate that something has to be important or meaningful to the greater cause. Like, if that's the expectation of every single thing we do, I think that that will crush us. That there are things that we can do. I don't know. Like, we can do things that we call frivolous or feel frivolous, and maybe they will remain frivolous, or maybe they will become the most important thing that we've ever done. Like, that mandate from the front end that something has to be important and meaningful for the greater good before you do it is just, I think it's a crushing way to move through the world.
Hear, hear.
Okay. So I guess the homework assignment feels like, do it in some way and tell us about it.
Maybe a tiny practice is like, just go sit in front of a mirror for 30 seconds and just make eye contact and see what that is like. Or 10 seconds if 30 feels long. There will be more on this. And I am currently turning the workshop I just taught, self-gaze, into an online class, which can't totally be replicated in the same way, but it will be a taste of it. And that is coming soon
to an internet space through near you. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. I think there's a lot.
Thanks for so many excellent questions. That was, it's actually made me rethink what this practice means to me in some ways.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks. Talk to you later.
Love you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.